You are listening to Punk News Podcast, episode 646. We're getting close to 650, but today we've got a special episode. We're talking to Eric Bresler of Philomoka. Let's play a track and we'll talk to Eric. We are back, and the listeners certainly have heard me gab on and on and on about Philomoka, but the fact of the matter is it is the raddest venue in Philly and one of the raddest venues anywhere for sure, especially in 2023, especially since I've tried to book a smaller show for a band in some bars, and oh my God, it's such a headache. At any rate, so Philomoka is where I've thrown Summer Soiree 1, which is World Inferno, World Inferno, Posers, Crazy in the Brains, and Push It to the Limit. Summer Soiree 3, which was World Inferno, Joe Jack Talcum, a Trash Knife, and Chip from Pure Hell. It's where we also threw the Magnificent Matinee with World Inferno, a early appearance of Catbite and Quam. And it's also where we threw Summer Soiree 5, which was Marissa Paternoster, Joe Jack Talcum, and the bands. Vixen 77, and I'm missing one other opening act there. And it's also where we just threw arguably the best Summer Soiree, Dwarves, Zorn, Vixen 77, Mikey Erg, the band, and who am I? Oh, and Danbert of Chumbawamba. It's also where we threw the Spring Slam Down 2 and probably another show that I'm missing. At any rate, Philomoka, it's on Spring Garden. It's an all-ages venue. It's not even a bar. I guess they also show like a lot of films there. They have comedy shows there. I guess mainly it's probably a film place, but it's really awesome, the best place to have shows. At any rate, we're here with Eric. Eric, why don't you tell the people what Philomoka is and like what the general deal is and the history of it as an actual, it's actually a mausoleum, which is pretty wild.
Yeah. So, so you mentioned it's primarily a film place. Which is how it's always been in my mind, but I think Philomoka is a lot of different things to a lot of different people. You know, some people may just think of it as a concert venue and have no idea the other things we do there. Some people, you know, think of it as a comedy venue or like a you know, a venue for private parties. And I think that's kind of the beauty of the room. It is, so the space, which is, you know, kind of an all-purpose venue that specializes in, you know, underground and counterculture type subject matter. It's housed in a 100-year-old former showroom for mausoleums. So in the late, you know, 1800s, this was a family-owned business where you would walk in and choose the mausoleum that you wanted, you know, for your passing. And that was a three-generation family business located at 12th and Spring Garden here in Philly. And I'd say around the 1960s, the business closed and the building sat there vacant. The exterior of the building, by the way, was fashioned kind of like a mausoleum. So it has this very foreboding stone exterior. Eventually, the building went through a few different short-term leases. Like in the 80s, there was a sculptor who had a studio out of there. And then it kind of came to prominence in the mid-2000s when this record producer named Diplo purchased the building. And he used it as his recording studio for his record label, Mad Decent. And he used to throw these big electronic music parties, often outside in the street. Those early parties eventually became this touring festival called the Mad Decent Block Party. So the first block party was our building, you know, in the street outside. He became a very successful producer and performer and moved out of Philly around 2010, I believe. And that was when my predecessor rented the building from him to use as a recording studio and kind of... you know, music video shooting location, that kind of thing. And he was the one that dubbed it Philomoca, which stands for Philadelphia Mausoleum of Contemporary Art, Philomoca. So my predecessor Gavin was there for 2 years, and he decided to move on to something new. And a mutual friend of ours recommended me to take over the building. And it really came together within a few days. I was like, yeah, I'll take this. I see so much potential in this room. And for those who aren't familiar, it's basically just one big empty room, 200 capacity. And, you know, we have rotating art shows and we have posters on the wall and such. But that's a pretty concise history of the building.
If you go to it, actually, it says Mad Decent, which is like Diplo's brand. I guess his record label or whatever, like on the front. So Diplo, is he cool or like what's the deal?
Well, Diplo is at a level of success where I've had very limited interactions with him, of course. You know, he has business people that I deal with. But any interactions I've had with him have been great. He is... a fantastic landlord. That's all. That sums it up best.
I guess we should probably give him credit in that. Like, he's... I'm not even a huge Green Day fan, but you have to give Green Day credit in that. Like, people don't even know how much money Green Day has put into Berkeley and Oakland, certain shops and 924 Gilman's. Like, they basically said, "Here's some money to do what you want to do. We're not even going to ask for it back or whatever." So you got to give Diplo like super credit for, I guess, allowing Philomoca to be one of the very few all ages concert friendly art spaces in the city, right? I mean, that's pretty cool of them, right?
Yeah, without a doubt. And also we had some troubles right before the pandemic, which extended through the pandemic. And he had no issues with me having to go, you know, in front of the Board of Building Standards and get the building zoning adjusted and get a certificate of occupancy. Like, he was fine with all of that. I think a lot of landlords, you know, if their building is shut down by L&I, they might just take a step back and be like, let's get these tenants out. Let's sell this building. But no, he was cool with everything I had to do. And, you know, a lot of the things I had to do involved paperwork that actually needed interactions with the actual building owner, not just the tenant. So, yes, huge props to him. But again, I wouldn't say I know him personally, but I will say that he's very kind to us.
Yeah, actually, I want to talk about the, quote, fight with the city or whatever in a minute. But let's talk about, Filimoca in general. So like, what's your title, and what is that you actually do at Filimoca? I mean, to me, you're the guy that runs the place, and you're I call you the main man to all the other people that like work there. So but like, what's your position? What do you do on a day to day basis at Filimoca?
Well, I've always, from early on, created this image that Filimoca is this much larger thing with a staff. But Filimoca is really just me. I handle all of the booking. I run sound half the time. I run all the films. I mop at the end of the night. I set up chairs for the screenings, update the website, set up the ticket pages. It is a one-person operation. And then to give a quick shout out, our good friend Justin, who you know well.
Soundman Justin, who I've referred to many times in the Punk News podcast. Soundman Justin.
Yeah, so Soundman Justin has actually hung out at Filimoca before I ever had, and was just kind of a fixture there, just hanging out when I started. And he just became a real integral part of the room. So the nights when I'm not running sound, Justin's in there running sound. But yeah, so I mean, it's really just the two of us. And then, we have a pretty large base of volunteers who help the door. And it's really any bookings that you see went through me or were conceived by me. I think a lot of people can kind of tell what I was responsible for and what was like kind of an outside rental, I guess you could say.
You bring up a lot of things that I want to talk about, actually. But let's talk about the first summer soiree. I don't even know how I even became aware of Filimoca. It might have been Audrey Crash who recommended it. Eric, do you know Audrey Crash?
Yeah. Way back, her old band Fire Pussy, I saw back in 1998, a year after I first moved to Philly. I was a Drexel student. I moved to Philly in 97, and I became a member, a DJ at WKDU. And through KDU, I was kind of introduced to the whole West Philly punk scene. So by 1998, I was going to, Stalag 13 and Kill Time. And that was how I met Audrey and her bandmates. And we've stayed in touch since then. We have friends in common, and we've always been friendly. And her band Pushing It to the Limit played at Filimoca quite a few times prior to your first soiree. So, yeah, great performer.
Yeah, Audrey rules. Eric was referring to, he referred to Phil Time and Stalag 13. Those were very punk maximum rock and roll style unofficial venues on Lancaster Avenue in Philly, kind of a landmark of the 90s, late yep. 90s, early 2000s Philly punk scene. Sort of an analog to Gilman, except for Gilman is kind of more official. So that's what I was referring to. It must have been Audrey who recommended Filimoca. Summer Soiree 1 was really just me challenging myself. Can I book a show? Because I never booked a show ever. And so instead of doing the smart thing and just like booking a small basement show, I said, I'll book World Inferno and three other bands. And the show itself was amazing. Although I didn't have fun, but I didn't intend to have fun. I was honestly on the edge of my seat all night long for multiple reasons. First of all, There's this old story that Jack Terrycloth of World Inferno used to tell, in that like early on in the era of World Inferno, they played a bar owned by a mafia, and they like either lit it on. They used to have in the early days of World Inferno, they had a fire blower, and so the fire blower lit the bar on fire, and so the mafia actually hired a publicist. Well, this is Jack's story. Hired a publicist to call venues where World Inferno was booked and tell them that they light things on fire, so don't have them because they're going to light the bar on fire. And so I booked World Inferno, and then booking World Inferno was actually really easy. But then there was a couple of things that came up. Like one guy says, is this band Jerk? But then Eric sends me an email. He's like, I heard they light the stage on fire. Is that true? And I'm like, what? They haven't done that in like 20 years. Eric, I don't think you actually remember saying that, but I mean, I guess you don't remember who told you that or anything about that, do you?
Actually, it does ring a bell, and it's not something I would have researched myself. So it's definitely something that someone would have clued me into. But I just directly ask. I'm easy to pacify. So, when you gave the all okay, I was just like, all right, nothing to worry about.
And then, so I think that's funny because, Jack Terrycloth, quite, I mean, it was pretty obvious that a lot of his tales were tall tales, and that was half the fun, is which ones were real, which one were tall tales. So apparently that one was like a real one. So at Summer Soiree 1, I gave everybody globe bracelets, and Eric said to me, they're not going to throw things at the screen, are they? I'm like, no, why would anyone throw anything at the movie screen? And of course, as soon as I give people these globe bracelets, they start hurling them all around the room. I'm like, stop. But that show was really, honestly, that show was really, really crazy. We haven't had one as crazy at that since, which honestly is a good thing. But like it was nonstop stage diving. It was so hot in that, like, it got so hot that the fire alarm in the room went off.
Yep.
Eric, do you have any idea why that show was so, and there was actually like a crust punk, and Adam, when he was on the podcast years ago, and I told the story, but there was like a crust punk that was like crowd surfing, and he had a Ziploc bag full of some drink, and people were drinking out of this giant Ziploc bag that he had. It was like the grossest thing ever. Well, Eric, what? Oh, go ahead.
I'll tell you, my clearest memory of that night was an attendee jumped off the balcony and landed on another guy and basically like knocked him out. And so we carried him out and set him down outside, and he came to. But I just remember like kneeling next to him, like making sure that, like, you know, he didn't have a concussion and making sure he could still walk. You know, as crazy as Filmoka shows can get, stuff like that rarely happens. So yeah, I vividly remember that.
Well, you brought. I wasn't going to bring it up. So actually, I didn't know at the time. The guy that did that was there's this band called Rubbish and a band called Total Wine, and it's two twin brothers, and they are, well, I'm not sure. They're basically Beavis and Butthead. I mean, they really are. And so someone points up. It might have even been Jade of Posers, and they're like, look up. And I thought they were giving me the number one symbol. And I'm like, what? Why are you giving me the number one symbol, Jade? I think it was Jade. And she pokes, and I see there's this guy like climbing over the balcony. So yeah. I sprint up to the balcony and I grab him. And there's actually a great picture of me pulling him back off the balcony. And I'm like, don't you jump. And he says, I'm not going to jump. I'm saying, well, you better not jump. And so I stand right behind him, making sure he doesn't jump. And then I got distracted for literally 2 seconds, maybe 1 second. I look back and he's flying over the thing. And there's a picture of me grabbing after him as he's jumping off the balcony. It's a great picture.
Awesome.
And then I ran downstairs, and I honestly felt really cool. I don't know how I did this, but I picked him up and I grabbed a beer out of his hand at the same time. I threw the beer in the trash can and I carried him outside. And I felt like a real tough guy. And then the weird thing was, he was like really sad. Like he's like, can't I come back in? I'm like, no, you can't come back in. Like he was like, I'm like, what did you think was going to happen? Like, so Eric, do you have any idea why that show was so nutty?
No, I think I assumed it was just the built-in crowd that World Inferno had, or that punk news in general had, because that was really the first time I'd interacted with you. So I was just, you know, I remember just thinking like, wow, this bring out a wild crowd. But yeah, I mean, you know, World Inferno is such a high energy band, and yeah, really unique band as far as like the punk scene goes. So I think they were really good at kind of you know, getting a crowd hyped up and excited, and they're good at interacting with them, getting them, you know, going. So yeah, I don't know. I just you know, at the end of the night, I guess I was just like, wow, it was a wild show. I'm glad we made it out alive.
I could tell that you were, I don't know if frustrated was the right word, but you were, I remember the next time we had World Inferno, you like, I think we should have two security guards. And I couldn't even argue with that. And then the irony being the next World Inferno show, I mean, it wasn't tame, but it was not like the mania, the crazy mania of the first show, you know? And so the security guards were just like standing there watching a bunch of band nerds like skank all night long, you know? So anyways, let's talk about like the, so Philadelphia's got a ton of bars, and honestly, booking bars, I mean, it really sucks booking bars, because the bar owner only wants money. That's all it gets, which I mean, I guess he's got to run a business, but sometimes they're really tough about it, or the promoters are kind of dirty dogs or shady guys, or they got certain issues, which really gets in the way of organizing anything. If people might, well, I don't get myself sued here, but I've alluded to this one particular story multiple times. So booking bars just frigging sucks. So Eric, maybe you can talk about the importance of having, I mean, really all ages venues or art spaces as opposed to bar. I mean, I never used to really care about the, when I was when I was under 21, I never really cared about the concept of all ages shows because I'm like, well, you know, it's just a concert. There's more important things in the world than a concert. But then Ian MacKay had a quote, and basically he said, well, why should alcohol companies control where I can do art? And I'm like, that is so true. Like really, you know what I mean? I mean, how are those two things related at all? And the answer is they're not really. So Eric, maybe you can talk about the importance of the art space as opposed to the bar, both in terms of doing interesting. And actually, I'm rambling here, but the very cool thing about Philomoka is when we do punk news shows, like we did a game show a couple of times, although the second time it went horribly. But we also, you know, like I get up on stage and I yell at the audience and I do a whole opening thing. We do giveaway, we do goodie bags. One time Santa Claus came out and gave out a whole bunch of presents. And so the cool thing about Philomoka is we can do wild and wacky and silly stuff. A bar is not going to let us do that wild and wacky stuff at all. So Eric, maybe you can talk about the importance of the art space as to art, but also maybe as opposed to maybe safetyness and safety. Is that a word? Safetyness, safety and inclusion.
Yeah. I mean, I will always encourage the wacky stuff. You know, not only is it fun, but it like you said, it is kind of a, it's something that separates the room from your average, you know, bar show. I also always found it strange that bars are so hard to book since, like, you know, the vast majority of their income comes from drinks and food, you know, not from the ticket sales necessarily. You know, from, we're talking like, you know, small dive bars. But yeah, I mean, Philomoka isn't the easiest room to book. It's kind of designed that way. We're very selective.
Ooh, now I feel honored.
Yeah, like, you know, for every this sounds a bit rude, but you know, I'm over a decade in at this point. For every email I get that's something that I want to book, you know, I get a dozen of things that just don't fit the room, you know, aesthetically or morally or what have you. You know, when I get an offer for, like, say a show that has four bands and it's all, you know, four bands of four white dudes, it's just like, odds are that will not interest me unless it's like a certain type of music. And I get those emails all the time. That's why I use that as an example. So we've always tried to, and I say this as a kind of a royal we, we've always tried to promote inclusivity, promote diversity, and you know, not just because it's a nice thing to do, but because it's interesting and it separates the room. And again, hopefully, you know, not that it's a nice thing, but hopefully it's helping people. And, you know, it's a small gesture on my end, you know, just giving a room for the night. But then that can mean a lot to certain people, be it the bands or the audience members. I love talking to attendees who are like, you know, the first concert I ever attended was at Philomoka, or I saw this here and it changed my life. You know, I love hearing stuff like that. But yeah, you said some other interesting things during that. Well, what else were you talking about? All ages. All ages is so the concept is so important because on a personal level, I missed out on so many bands because I was under 21. You know, like here I am in Philadelphia, the venue is here, the band is here, but I just can't get in. Which of course wasn't the case in those West Philly punk houses. You know, there's no alcohol company controlling the venue. You know, it's all DIY and everyone is welcome. And you know, like I feel like in order to promote the, you know, the scene or whatever you want to call it, you know, it has to start with the youth and allowing the youth access to this world of punk rock or indie rock or what have you. It's so valuable to, as far as you know, keeping it alive goes. I think this is all just like kind of basic logical thought. So yeah, and you know what, just giving kids a place to go where something cool is happening, something that, you know, they're not getting out of their high school or, you know, their music lessons or whatever, giving them a platform is really important. I lived in West Philly and I had a few punk houses. I was in the House of Conflict, which was right around the corner from Stalag. Then I was in Funrama, which was 41st in Baltimore. And then I moved to the Astrocade, which was just two blocks from Philomoka. And that kind of booking style, that basement booking style, is completely what I still do at Philomoka. You know, it's just, I just whittle everything down to the basics. And it's like, you know, everything is very simple. It's like, we make this much money, you make this much money, we do this promotion, you know, and you do it all yourself. I think that Philomoka is as far from being, you know, entangled with corporations as can be. I'm always turning down, you know, sponsorships. And recently these young promoters brought in like Red Bull reps who were handed out Red Bulls and that, you know, that heavy metal water that I always see ads for. And I cleared the room out of those people. That is not what I want in our room. I don't care if it's free product. I don't want to give free promotion to anyone that had nothing to do with what's happening at that moment. So yeah, you know, I run the room like it's a DIY basement space. It's just cleaner and, maybe better organized, slightly earlier sound curfews. But yeah, I hope that when people come in, it feels like kind of homey and casual and, you know, a place that you can hang out.
You keep bringing up, you bring up a lot of things I want to refer to. First, when you said you want book for moral reasons, like what has someone approached you with that you didn't want to morally book? I mean, I can take a wild stab. I mean, like what has been approached you that you didn't want to book for moral reasons?
Oh, well, you know, actually, to give an example, 2 days ago, I was getting ready to announce an independent film. And as I was Googling around to, you know, write the synopsis, I noticed that a theater in Chicago had canceled this film. And I was like, oh, what happened? And then it was this whole involved story about how the film was anti-trans and how it could be interpreted in different ways. But it was causing pain to certain people. So when I read something like that, I guess I weigh what's at hand, but if people are being offended by this film, I'm not going to show it. And I immediately canceled it. Cause you know, it's like, it's not so important to make a statement that might upset people. You know, from the perspective of a venue owner, it's like, is this thing worth, you know, am I going to die on the hill for this film? No, this film is not. This is one possible event of, you know, 350 that we host a year. I remember I wanted to book this guy named Boyd Rice. Are you familiar?
Oh, yeah, Boyd Rice. A lot of work with Psychic TV. A lot of work with what's his name? David Tibet, and a lot of work with Death in June.
Yes. Yes. And so industrial pioneer. And but, you know, he has a history of wearing like fascist propaganda, like, you know, as style choices. And, you know, you weigh the pros and the cons and you're like, well, he did this. Can't have the venue associated with anything resembling that. He can't play there. That's just one example that just came to mind. Yeah, so like, you know, I love challenging material. I love controversial material. We've hosted so much. I just always try to avoid kind of unnecessary hassles. Although sometimes I have embraced them. Like maybe 5 years ago, we hosted the Satanic Temple. We've hosted them quite a few times, but on this occasion, we hosted the Satanic Temple for a Black Mass, which was, you know, like a theatrical, you know, flashing lights and loud sounds, and they sacrificed a baby doll. You know, it was a lot of fun. So, two installments of it, both sold out that night. But after I announced it, I started getting letters in the mail from some local churches. And then that spun into me just getting spams, you know, just spam mail from all of these religious people saying, you know, how dare you host a Black Mass? This is evil. This is not art. And like the mayor was CC'd on a lot of the emails. a local journalist told me that on the day of the event, his child's school, a mass email actually went out about this event happening that night, I guess a warning to parents. Journalists picked up on the fact that this was all happening, and it was actually all really stressful. But at the end of the day, there was just two protesters out front for like 48 hours. And yeah, it went off really well, without a hitch. My favorite thing that came out of it was the night before the Black Mass. It was just like a normal R5 indie rock show. And this religious guy dressed up like a rocker. He wrote that in his blog post about this. He dressed up as a rocker and came into the room and hid 12 of these little silver medallions throughout the room. It sealed the evil within the room. And he wrote this awesome blog post about doing this, like he was, you know, James Bond. And he talks about how he went outside and splashed holy water all over the sidewalk. It's so good. That right there is a level of mania that I wouldn't want in our room. But an example of kind of like one of the many troubles I've dealt with over time. I had this really frustrating one last year. Some young, like, you know, TikTok hip hop kid hit me up for a show, and we were booked that night, and I just wrote back, sorry, we're booked that night, best of luck, which is my standard email reply to pretty much everyone. And he wrote back with like a screenshot of the website showing that date wasn't on the calendar, and so, you know, called me a liar. And so I responded, I was like, well, if you must know, there's a private party that night, so we can't help you, but again, best of luck. And then like 5 minutes later, the kid goes on Instagram and does this like whole post about it, calling me rude. And then hundreds of people start emailing me and Instagram commenting and writing Google reviews, like attacking me, saying I'm rude. And it all wrapped up, you know, in a couple hours, but it was like crazy. And when something like that happens, you're like, why do I even like reply? So stuff like that happens all the time. Yeah, it just comes with the job.
One last question, and then we'll play a track and come back and talk some more. This is really just a hypothetical question, is, and we briefly discussed this once before, is John Hinckley Jr. the guy that shot at President Reagan and actually shot some other people, at least one, which actually did die. He got out of jail not that long ago, and he was doing concerts. And of course, as the listeners know, World Inferno, Jack Terrycloth, World Inferno, when he was in high school, he called the town over and said, and quoted suicidal tendencies, I shot President Reagan, I'll do it again and again and again. And he didn't know that Reagan actually was in that town giving a speech. And so Terrycloth actually got arrested and was on probation, I believe, for a long time. And I think he might have even written Hinckley once or talked to him a couple of times or even visited him in jail. So by then, Terrycloth had already passed away, RIP. But if he was still alive, even though I even think it's almost in poor taste to book John Hinckley because he did kill somebody, like, I would have been tempted to throw a World Inferno John Hinckley show. Eric, would you have accepted that show? Feel free to say no.
Well, of course, you can imagine that multiple people encouraged me to book that when he was looking for tour dates. And I would, you know, I'm a big supporter of people that do their time, you know. I personally would have booked it. I would not have booked it in my room, though. So if I was a promoter, I think it would have been fine to showcase his music, which is actually kind of interesting, you know, in like a Daniel Johnston type of way. But no, I would not book that in my own room because I wouldn't, you know, I just wouldn't want to face any public backlash. And of course, his whole tour was canceled, so obviously there was a lot of backlash. Where is he supposed to play? Like Metropole or somewhere? And
somewhere in New York. I remember somewhere in New York he was going to play. And they issued, actually, we talked about this on the podcast like last year. I'm going to read the statement just because it's so bizarre, this statement. Give me 1 second. And then we'll play a track. Let's see here. Here we go. This was like one of the most bizarre statements. Oh, it looks like it got removed. Well, at any rate, the statement basically said that, like, we support people's rights to do it, and just because we don't agree with art doesn't mean we don't want to host it, and we're not opposed to dangerous art. And then the next sentence was like a schizophrenic person. They're like, John Hinckley's a bad guy, and we don't like his art. It was like so contradictory. It was weird. At any rate,
I actually feel for them. I understand the desire to showcase this, but I also understand the kind of need to live a more stress-free life and not have to deal with the controversy.
So, I mean, what's it like being subject to the whims of the public? That is, and I certainly can't fault you for being pragmatic as opposed to totally idealist. But, like, let's say you want to have something cool or interesting or even, you know, what's the word I'm looking for? Even philosophically dangerous or edgy, and the public says, you can't do it. Even though you have a legal right to do it, you still want to do it because it's not worth the hassle. What's your opinion of that? Because, those kinds of things are very common. In the 90s, there was some messed up stuff on stage. You know what I mean? Like, messed up stuff. These days, a lot of that stuff would be shut down before it even happened. What's your opinion of that change? I'll just give an example. There was the Jim Rose Sideshow, which I saw open for Guar when I was 16, and honestly, I was too young to see that. Like, it was messed up. Like, they had, like, this one guy that, like, nailed his dick into a piano. Like, he took his dick and nailed it into a piano. It was, like, messed up. There was, like, some stuff that would definitely be considered racist now. Now, legally, they have a right to... Well, I don't put the dick nailing. That actually might not be legal. But the non-bloody acts on the stage... You have a legal right to do it, but a lot of that stuff just wouldn't happen just because it's too edgy and enough people are willing to make enough of a stink about it to make it not worth the hassle for the booker. Do you have an opinion on those kinds of things?
Yeah. I mean, I've always embraced that kind of stuff, but you're forced to, you know, walk a line. One extreme example that you just brought to mind. We had a performance artist in one time who took off her clothes and put this giant metal fish hook, like she put it up her bottom and there was a long rope attached to it, and two audience members came up and they jumped rope with that stuck in her. It was like, and I just remember being like, oh my goodness, is this art? I'm not even sure. But like I've had to deal with plenty of stuff like that over the years. I mean, there are people who my good friend Suzanne Muldowney, who New Jersey performance artist who's known for dressing up as Underdog, the cartoon character. I've heard her on the stage, you know, 10 times, and there's people that find that exploitative. One time I did this alien themed event, and the MC was this radio host named Riley Martin, who used to do a alien themed show on one of the Howard Stern Sirius channels. And there was a guy on Reddit who attacked me for having him in, saying that it was exploitative, even though he was just, you know, doing what he does for a living. I've gotten pretty good at weighing, like, what's too extreme and what a few members of the public may end up overreacting to. I've never had to issue an apology for anything, except we have this in-house film club, the Philadelphia Psychotronic Film Society. We meet twice a month. There's 250 members now, and every time we meet, a different member chooses the film for the night. And early on, 2016, when the group first started, one of the members picked a Nazi exploitation film. And up to that point, we've been watching, like, you know, goofball, like, you know, self-taught filmmakers, you know, harmless stuff. And then suddenly the crowd was just hit by this, like, you know, super intense, like, graphic and gory and disturbing film. And I think over 30 people walked out. Those that stayed just wanted to stay and yell at the end. And I felt awful. And from that point on, we started instituting, like, a warning for the film that night, you know, content warnings. But in that case, I did have to go online, and, you know, I was sincerely sorry. And while some people were like, you don't have to apologize, people should know what they're getting into, like, I just don't want to ruin anyone's night with anything that happens in that room. I don't want to surprise people to that degree. That's the only time I've ever, like, really felt bad about something that I hosted. And it was quickly remedied, and the group is still around, and it's bigger than ever.
And I actually respectfully disagree with you with regard to content warning. It's like, if the audience is adults, then unless it's something truly, truly disturbing, which is borderline illegal, I think, listen, you're an adult. I'm not here to be the judge of what you should or should not see. You know, so, you know, to me, it's almost like the same as the parental warning sticker on CDs. But that's just my opinion. Anyways, I don't want to keep dragging this out, but actually, you can bring up interesting things. Hey, Riley Martin, I totally disagree with, like, any – I mean, because it's not like Riley Martin was mentally diminished. He was just – he's just a weird guy. So I think it's, like, not cool to, like, say just because he's weird that he shouldn't be able to do what he wants to do or, do, like, make money performing. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But the related issue, though, is Wesley Willis, and I totally agree – with the Jello perspective, Jello Biafra perspective, and that, yes, Wesley Willis was diminished, and yes, some people went to his shows to laugh at him. However, just because someone is diminished doesn't mean they're incapable of creativity, and perhaps being diminished, they can come up with some interesting forms of creativity that a, quote, normal person wouldn't. But also, Wesley Willis is up there having fun and making money, so even if some people are there for a mean-spirited reason, that shouldn't detract from what Wesley Willis wants to do. I don't know if you agree with that or disagree with that, Eric.
I do. I completely subscribe to that. And also, just to quickly wrap up what you were just saying, there are dozens of members of this film group that we have that completely agree with what you were saying about not having to warn people. And I used to have that opinion, but now I just aim for kindness.
well, there you have it. Let's play a World Inferno track. Let's play the track where Jack Terrycloth talks about getting in trouble with the law regarding his phone call regarding President Reagan. This is World Inferno doing Secret Service Fighting USA.
Go. And women who are out for their mothers, so don't be sitting around at home. I'll go home to get your name, or you go out is my window. I hope so. If the cops didn't know something, I think you and I both know. Tell me you want, but I'm out the window. Goddamn mess.
And we're back. And Eric, we've already been rapping for 45 minutes. You have a little bit more time? Because I got a lot of stuff to ask you, but
Let's keep going.
So actually, let's talk about kind of an interesting thing, and then we'll talk about some fun stuff. So Philomoka had a real problem during COVID, like a lot of venues, like every venue did. A lot of venues shut down in that. Oh, no, I got it backwards. So about a year and a half before COVID, Philomoka used to have this amazing balcony that went around the top. And it was so awesome because the venue had a floor and like an old fashioned style, you know, 1920s balcony where you could watch the show from. And it was so cool. And I'm so glad I got to do a few concerts there when the balcony was still open. But then Eric got hit with this L&I thing that said that, well, that you got to shut down and we got to inspect this and inspect that. And we got to make sure you got a sprinkle. And if I'm getting something wrong, let me know. And it really affected Philamogan. Actually, Eric kind of had to apply to the city to get L&I approval. And it was such a dire battle that he actually had people appear at the hearing and advocate on behalf of Philomoka, and had people, including yours truly, write letters in support of Philomoka because there was a real danger that the city wasn't going to let Philomoka reopen. Maybe coincidentally, at the same time, property values in the immediate surrounding area were skyrocketing in Philadelphia. The people in the Philadelphia area might know, from between like 2018 to 2020 or so, Philadelphia property skyrocketed by double, triple, quadruple, 10 times. And Eric, you can take a pass, or you can speak generally, or you can just talk about the actual battle on paper. I felt there was dirty dog business behind the scenes somewhere. I don't know if it was at the government level. I don't know if it was at competitors. I don't know if it was real estate developers that wanted to get the buy the building and, you know, convert it into housing, which a lot, many, many nearby buildings, that's exactly what happened. It was a real little guy. It was a real Dave versus Goliath scenario, and you definitely were definitely facing closure, and you stayed tough and you stayed strong and you fought back and did win in the end. But maybe you could just briefly summarize the battle and what you think was going on and how you felt about it. And were you like depressed during the year and a half the battle took? Because it took Philip Mooker like a year and a half shut down due to this stupid L&I thing. And then when they opened back up, they got like fined for having litter on the sidewalk. And it's like, what? And then COVID hit. So, Eric, why don't you tell that story as much or as little as you want?
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, those are some of the darkest times of my life, just because this building just means so much to me. But yeah, the quick timeline was that out of nowhere in September of 2019, it was a Friday night metal show. L&I showed up, licenses and inspections, and not only shut down the show, but shut down the building. So again, I remember I'm running this place like a DIY space. So I didn't have the proper zoning. I didn't have the proper permits to do what we were doing. I kind of always hid behind our zoning as an art gallery, but we reached a point of productivity where we really outgrew that, you know. But I hid behind it, and, you know, we were there for 9 years until this happened. So September 2019, it's a big shock. We get shut down. A very kind local lawyer agreed to help me get the building back open, and I remember her saying, like, you know, this could take like 6 months, and I was thinking, oh god, I thought this would be a couple weeks, and the process actually extended to, you know, over a year and a half. So we were shut down in September 2019. COVID started in March of 2020. At that point we had our zoning hearing, and that's where everybody kindly wrote in, you know, letters of support, and we had to meet with a really rough neighborhood association, and but basically we got the zoning we needed. So, and then COVID hit, and it was like, oh my god, what are we gonna do? I already had a GoFundMe going, which I was really reluctant to start because I'd always been really proud that Philomoka survived entirely on door sales. You know, like, it's kind of like the art supported the building, which is, you know, a wonderful statement. But I couldn't keep up with rent and such. You know, with no income coming in from the business, and I had to keep paying rent and you know, keep the lights on. So so we had a crowdfunding thing going, and COVID hit, and that was really scary. But actually COVID kind of saved the building because it introduced all of these grants, and it introduced I forget what it was called, but there was a fantastic government grant that didn't come through until, like, you know, 10 months into COVID, but it still was a lifesaver. The you know, the small venue operators grant, SVOG. And also, like, all these companies stepped up. Like I mentioned earlier that I stay away from corporations, but we got this really interesting offer. I'd say this was in the summer of COVID, so summer of 2020.
where there's this local performer named Tierra Whack, and she did a concert at our venue a few years prior, and then she really like blew up. Like, she's a very well-known performer now. And Vans, the sneaker company, was doing this thing where they had you know, well-known performers pick a small business, and then that small business got to design their own pair of Vans, and then proceeds from the sale of those went to the business, and she very kindly chose us. So I had a graphic designer artist friend of ours design a pair of Vans, and you know, the sale of those helped us, you know, it was probably like 4 months worth of rent, so that was awesome. So yeah, lots of interesting things happened during COVID, but you know, meanwhile, I'm just spending my days trying to navigate the city, which is even more difficult during COVID times because everything's remote. The zoning actually seemed kind of easy to get at the end of the day, but getting the certificate of occupancy, you know, the room capacity, getting the inspections that are required for that was insane. Getting the building, you know, up to the fire code, was crazy. It took tens and tens of thousands of dollars to, you know, I had to install a shunt switch, which, you know, if the fire alarm goes off, it kills the PA system. It's a safety thing. You know, I had to install new fire doors and like foyers, which makes no sense. I still argue that. I don't understand why it's safer to have two doors to exit a building rather than just one. It seems like you're putting an extra barrier between people and the outside. But yeah, so I learned all about this stuff, and at the end of the day, we reopened in July of 2021. So what, a couple months shy of 2 years. And, it really was this kind of like, you know, youth save the, you know, the local, like at the end of Breaking Two, you know, the youth center is saved thanks to the efforts of the people. So yeah, super stressful, but hey, we're back. And then, oh, and like you mentioned, so we reopened in, you know, summer 2021. In September 2021, I walk in to work one day, and there's an orange notice on our door saying, you know, it's like demolition will occur in 30 days if the exterior isn't fixed. And I was like, what is this? And in that case, someone directly reported that the exterior was dangerous. That there was, you know, falling rock, which there wasn't. There were a couple cracks, you know, so we had to get that fixed. And then, of course, yeah, I like that you remember that we got cited for, like, littering. You know, it's a neighborhood where trash is just constantly blowing through the streets. But yeah, like, those minor troubles never end, but the major ones hopefully have been put to rest.
See, that feels like to me that, like someone's got it out for you. You know what I mean? Like, there's trash all over the city. You know what I mean? But
well, yeah, whatever. I mean, the origin of why this all happened in the first place is still a mystery. We don't know who called Elle and I. We don't know why they did. Yeah, and we'll probably never know. But we're still here, and that's what's important.
When I win Mega Millions tonight and get my billions, I'm going to hire a private investigator, Eric, and we'll find out who did it. at any rate, listen, Eric, what are some of your most memorable shows and or movie? Oh, actually, we haven't even talked about this. So Eric shows a lot of movies at the thing. And the cool thing is, like, they'll show, like, The Room, and Greg says Taros will be there from The Room, or they'll show, like, Troma Films, and Lloyd Kaufman will be there, or other. So what are some of the most memorable concerts you've had there, and maybe some of the most memorable movie? And also, if you're in a Japanese movie, they're always showing, like, neat Japanese movies, especially ones from, like, the 80s and stuff. And actually, Eric, now I'm thinking about it, I would humbly request some Akira Kurosawa films there, man, because those films are amazing. It'd be cool to see them on the bigger screen. So what are some of the most memorable shows you've seen there, and or that you've thrown there, and some of those memorable movie events?
Oh, there's so many. I remember in 2013, we had the Monochrome set in. It was their first Philly show in 30 years. And that night I was just like, oh my God, like, this is awesome. Are you a fan? They're one of my favorite post-punk.
Oh yeah, Monochrome says real cool, yes.
Yeah, and then I think they've played there twice since then. That was the night where I was like, wow, like, this room's really becoming like a proper music venue. Like, this legendary 80s UK band is in here. There have been some really memorable shows. The first Philly show for that band Idols was in our room. And it was crazy. You know, they're like a festival level band now. One time R5 booked two nights of Ceremony and Nothing, like a co-headliner. Yeah. Trying to think of some others. I've done a lot of like for movie stuff. I've always just tried to bring in people I was interested in. So, I mean, I've had so many cool guests, like Neil Breen, who's a great outsider filmmaker. Alex Cox, you know, made Repo Man. I had Jessica Harper in from, you know, Suspiria for a screening of Phantom of the Paradise. I did a Cabin Boy anniversary that Chris Elliott and the film's director came out for. And there was a Q&A moderated by the guy who hosts The Best Show. That was a memorable one. A lot of like early 80s no wave filmmakers. Like I've had, you know, and poets and performers. I've had Lydia Lunch in multiple times. I had Beth O in. I was lucky enough to have Nick Zed in before he passed, who was just like a real interesting, strange guy. Yeah, and I've done a lot of like public access retrospectives. I find like the events that are truly memorable to me are usually like the underattended ones, you know, the ones that the public doesn't show interest in. Stuff that they totally enjoy if they gave it a chance, but you know, like there's just so much out there that sometimes you don't have time to, you know, try something new. And one thing that Filmoke has always been successful with is kind of like insisting that people take a chance on something they might not know, and hopefully, you know, they're rewarded at the end of the day. But yeah, I've hosted so much stuff. I mean, is there anything that comes to your mind aside from the soirees?
Some were soiree one, some were soiree three, some were soiree five, some were soiree six. But I mean, actually, when Cat Bite was first popping, they threw the record release show there, which was an amazing, amazing show. Screaming Females have played there, an amazing, amazing show. You had the comedian Neil Hamburger there, which was one of the best stand-ups that I've ever seen, just because he's Neil Hamburger. It was great, you know. What are some of the biggest disasters that have happened at Filmoke?
Well, guest or performer-wise, nothing really comes to mind. I had a guest once who was, I would never say the person's name, but they were related to the TV show Twin Peaks, which I'm a big fan of. And just a real sleazy guest who kind of like blackmailed me into paying triple their guarantee. I mean, in my mind, that kind of thing is a disaster, and it ruined an otherwise awesome event.
Was it the Chuck Berry thing where he gets there and he like demands more money where I'm not going on? Is that like what happened?
It was more like they went beyond what they were contracted to do in a very personable way. And then the retaliation came out of the blue later on. it felt very, scripted, I guess. But yeah, anyway, we've certainly had our share of snotty bands, you know, and, you know, kind of performance mishaps. But overall, I've been here over a decade. I've never had to file an insurance claim. So we're pretty, you know, safe, calm space for the most part.
What's your dream booking, band wise or movie wise?
Well, I'm personally a big Italo disco fan. There are some performers from the 80s that are still active who I would love to have in. A lot of people that I never thought, you know, I never imagined would play the room I've gotten in. Like, are you familiar with Loris, who was in the band Grudge?
I don't think so, no.
Some people consider this Grudge song to be like the first punk rock song. It's certainly the first punk song sung by a gay performer when Christine comes around. Highly recommend you check that song out. But from this weird little punk band, Loris went on to have this wild disco career, and he still performs to this day. He's Canadian, and I was fortunate enough to fly him in for a really rare performance. I thought that was so cool. At this point, like I think I've seen everyone I've ever wanted to see live. except for the toy dolls, and that would be a dream performer. The toy dolls haven't come to the States since what, like maybe 99?
Well, they did play the Bay Area in like 2008 or 2009 because I had the option of going to see Gwar or the toy dolls, and I picked Gwar. And honestly, I don't regret it. Although I love the toy dolls.
I remember the night they played, I think it was the Electric Factory in 99. And I just didn't feel like going out that night, and I will always regret it.
Well, maybe some other UK bands of the same time frame might be over kind of soon, so that'd be cool. Here's some cool stuff that's happening at Philomoka coming on up. Let's see here. They just showed the documentary of the Mutants live at some prison, which was pretty cool. That already happened, so you can't see that too bad. However, here's some other cool stuff that's happening. Let's see here. They've got Crown Court tomorrow night with Violent Way and Jive Bomb, one of Moore's favorite bands.
That's going to be crazy.
Psychotronic Film Festival or Film Society is coming up. That's what Eric was saying, like weird and whacked out films. Drop Dead, that's kind of cool. Drop Dead's playing. I know Oxbow's playing, which is very cool.
Yeah.
Let's see what else we got here. 35mm Hong Kong Rarities, Blood Ritual and Deadly Melody, 1988-1994. That's kind of cool. Let's see here. An Elephant Six documentary, which is kind of cool. Iron Lungs playing. I'm just going through. Let's see here.
Yeah, I think if you look through like our upcoming schedule, you see how diverse the programming is.
Jill Sobule, interestingly.
Yeah, Jill Sobule, late '90s icon. Yeah, it's a nice mix of stuff: comedy and movies. A birthday party documentary coming up. We got a record fair coming up.
The Philly Record Freakout, September 30. This is done through Punk News, of course. And the last one was pretty kicking, so this one should be pretty kicking too, for sure.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah, lots of different stuff. Philomoka.org.
So I guess just wrapping up, Eric, what's the key to throwing a good show? You know, the same kind of bands, different kind of bands, or the John G method, wildly different kinds of bands, totally different like style every show. So any audience that you build up is completely terminated by the next show, and way too many bands to ever make any money whatsoever. Is that the best way to do a show, Eric?
Totally depends on what you're aiming for. I think that there are certain genres that demand that the full bill kind of match the headliner's sound. I think there are headliners that are strong enough that you can throw a bunch of diverse sounds before them, and maybe they'll even have a crowd that's receptive to that. Do you recall the week that we reopened? There was a punk band that played. I'm looking up their name real quick. I wasn't familiar with them, but I know you would be. Off With Their Heads. Are you familiar?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Of course.
Yeah, so
big punk's favorite for sure.
Oh, awesome. Yeah, so they requested that a comedian open for them. And so we, R5 was like, do you know anyone? And I immediately picked this local guy who's a huge prop comic. He comes in with like 8 plastic bins of props and just picks up props and does, you know, really bad jokes with them, all, you know, plays on words. And the crowd was like super off put by that. But I think by the end of his set, they were like really digging it. And the band was like hysterically laughing. You can have a lot of fun with the content of any show. You know, you just weigh like audience reaction and you know, kind of like you don't want to take anything away from whoever's supposed to be the star of the night, you know. But yeah, like I could talk philosophy of booking forever. you know.
And actually I'm gonna complain for a minute. Why is it that people, not always, and it really depends on the show, but for some shows, the audience is just so disrespectful to the venue. They graffiti it, or they just throw stuff on the ground, or they're just jerks. It's like, why don't people recognize that this is like the only space that we have? Treat it nicely. Like why do people want to? And it's not every, I mean, honestly, it really only takes like one out of every 50 people to be a jerk to ruin it for everybody. But like, what is that person's mindset? What I'm referring to specifically is, and I talk about this on the podcast before, I probably shouldn't, is when I threw the low budget show, the bands were awesome, but the audience was just a bunch of jerks. Like, they just were like wet noodles. Like, they didn't give a shit about any of the opening bands. They were rough on the venue. Why do certain bands, I guess, have bad audiences, and why are people rude to venues, Zach? Do you have any ideas?
I don't, being someone who's always been respectful of any establishment that I enter. Yeah, that low budget's one is a surprise, because usually you get a pretty respectful crowd with like an older punk band. You know, they're not that old, but yeah, awesome show, by the way. I was there for that.
The show was awesome, but the crowd were dicks, man. I mean, I shouldn't even say that, but they were dicks. They were rude. I guess what it was is I created an entire Price is Right game called The Price is Wrong. I had these massive props, and I saw people, like, I had really good prizes, like Ramones records and Clash CDs and stuff. Like, I thought people would be like, hooray, we get to play a game show in between bands, you know? And they just, between every band, they all ran outside to smoke. And so I'm calling contestants' names. They're not there. And it was just a total disaster. And I was so bummed out by it. Plus, the audience was kind of rowdy and just kind of rude and irritable. Like, what was with? I'm so annoyed by that, Eric. I'm so annoyed.
I will say that a rule of thumb that I always follow as far as crowds go is that metal crowds are the absolute best, and hip hop crowds are the worst as far as showing respect to the venue goes.
Interesting. Why do you think metal crowds show respect to the venue?
You know, I don't know. I've just observed this for years. They are metal people are just there for the music and often to drink and yeah, they just don't cause trouble or fuck with things. Yeah, it's great. I will always host metal shows, especially ones that draw like an older metal crowd out. But literally, most problems we've ever had with the venue were at hip hop shows. I've seen like disturbing stuff happen, and it's like I barely host though. And it's funny to rule out an entire genre of music, but I rarely host hip hop shows anymore after just a string of like awful things happening. As far as graffiti and stuff like that go, that's usually the kind of young, uninspired pop punk crowd, I would say, and that comes with like being in all ages room. But yeah, I think young people who are excited to be out on their own and be in an exciting place often make themselves a little too at home, you know.
I will say I was really worried about the Dwarves show. I thought, oh man, this crowd might be dicks, or they might. It blew my mind, and there was a lot of trash. But the venue itself wasn't damaged at all, and the crowd was just there to have fun and not like be jerks. And I was very delightfully surprised that like they came to have fun. Like, I was blown away that the Dwarves crowd, which, you know, the Dwarves are a louder, faster, meaner band, that their audience was there to have fun, and the low budget crowd was just a bunch of curmudgeons. Who knows, man? Who knows?
Who knows?
At any rate, let's see. I guess just to wrap this up, Eric, what would you like to see happen with Philomoka over the next couple of years?
Oh, I'm so happy with our current programming and output that I just hope that it keeps up. Philomoka's always had this kind of chameleon-like quality aesthetically, so I'll be transforming the interior look of the room very shortly, which will be really cool. And yeah, I think that we are currently like really in our golden period. So I want to keep that up. We are very professional at the moment, not nearly as, you know, dangerous or maybe even as punk as we used to be, but, everything's very professional, and I'm very proud of what we host. And yeah, I just want to keep going at our current speed.
Well, there you have it. We're going to wrap this up with a track by Sparks. Eric, maybe you can talk about why Sparks was important to you. And it's the Sparks covering the Clash, but a track you might not expect them to cover. So why don't you tell us about this track, Eric, and then we'll close it on down.
Well, Sparks are my favorite band. They have been for many years. In fact, one of the first events that put Philomoka on the map after I took over was a Sparks-themed art show that had a dozen local performers covering Sparks songs. And yeah, they're just a band that means a lot to me. It was the first concert I ever took my daughter to. She's 4 years old now, and she's seen Sparks 3 times, which I think is an accomplishment. and then in the spirit of being on the Punk News podcast, I thought it would be fun to hear a cover song, you know, covering one of the punk greats. And this is an absolute wild rendition of We Are the Clash.
So who would expect the Sparks to cover We Are the Clash? Without a question, Clash's worst album. So bold move by Sparks, which I approve of. You can check out Philomoka at philomoka.org. Eric, thank you for being on the show. And this is Sparks covering The Clash. And go to our next record freakout at Philomoka and the next Punk News show at Philomoka. Who knows what it's going to be? We'll see you next week.
Stoppers, beboppers, air droppers, are you ready to sing? Right wing, left wing, I want something to see me through the siege about what you think. But we ain't gonna be treated like trash. We got one thing, we are the Clash. We are the Clash. It's like a match. See them where they do it, how they